Say hello to a new friend on an old road. Take a two-lane trip of memories into mysteries unknown. Come along for the ride. Jim Hinckley's America. Jim Hinckley's America.
Hey, good morning, my friends. Let's see how this works out today. I heard from Joe Sonderman a few minutes ago. A little bit of technical difficulties on that end, but what's new? Hey, good morning, Mr. Joe Sonderman.
Good morning. I'm sorry. I haven't been able to connect the other way there, so a good old-fashioned cell phone might have to do us.
Well, let's give that a try and just see what happens. Hey, how's Joe doing this morning?
It's a good morning. It's a beautiful day here in St. Louis, Mo, but, you know, things are pretty quiet. It's a Sunday morning.
You know, we haven't done much talking, and we're way overdue, and I don't think we've talked much since the apocalypse.
Well, the apocalypse.
Hey, you've been doing pretty – you've been always keep yourself busy there with the Missouri Route 66 Association. You're still editing the magazine.
Yeah, and sitting on the board and doing all sorts of stuff. And I just haven't been traveling as much as I'd like to of the last few, you know, the last few months or so, as I'm sure many people can kind of relate to that. But I did get out on the road for a little bit yesterday, and it sure felt good.
Yeah, you know, I've been really delinquent on road trips for the last couple of years. And you know what's odd is you almost develop an anxiety about travel if you're not used to it.
Yeah, and you get complacent. You get kind of set in your ways and used to a routine. And travel brings you out of that routine in a good way. But you got to make yourself get up and get out. And I'm really glad I did yesterday, if only for a few hours. Sometimes that's all it takes, and it gives you a fresh new perspective. And you feel the next day, you feel refreshed, and you just kind of relive the day before. So that's kind of where I'm at this morning. I went to Lebanon, Missouri yesterday for a little while.
Oh gosh, isn't it? You know, it's not a surprise that Ramona Lehman has passed. But it still leaves a huge, huge hole, personally and with the international Route 66 community.
Yeah, she was the longtime operator of the Munger Moss Motel there in Lebanon, and she was like an aunt or a grandmother to many of us. Many of us younger Route 66 folks, you'll hear us refer to her that way a lot, and she really was. And the thing I admired about Ramona the most was, although she was this beloved figure and admired all around the world, she didn't take any bovine flatulence, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. No, she was tough as nails.
Yeah, she was tough as nails, and I think that's how she made it all those years. In a business that lately, the past few years, has seen some hard times. And I just hope whoever ends up with the Munger Moss Motel shares her passion for the road, and more importantly, her passion for meeting and dealing with the people and the Route 66 community. So we went to her service yesterday, which was really nice. And a lot of the Route 66 community was there, and I just kind of hung in the back quietly. So, you know, I didn't really make my presence known or anything, just because I think that's the way she'd have wanted it. She wouldn't have wanted anybody to make a big deal out of it. I can hear her now. You know, they don't make a big deal out of it. So, you know, but and it was a nice trip. It was a lovely day for a drive, because we've had nothing here but rain the last few weeks, last few days, and rain and storms and wind and hail. And it was just nice to get out.
Oh, gosh. You know, I've got some great stories to share sometime with Bob and Ramona. When they'd come out to Arizona quite often in the winter. And between Bob and his cigarettes and Bob being accident prone, I can't remember what year it was, like 2015, 2016. I stopped by the Munger Moss. I wasn't staying. I just popped in for a visit to say hello and talked to Ramona and asked how Bob was. And she says, oh, you know how Bob is. He went and fell off the roof again.
Yeah, he was. It's funny because they were a pair. They were certainly made for each other, that's for sure. And I don't think the Munger Moss would have been what it was without the both of them together. And I just, again, my hopes are that it continues. I'm leery, but I sure hope somebody steps forward and does something great with it.
You know, speaking of Lebanon, you got the Route 66, the association's motor tour coming up here pretty quick, don't you?
Oh, funny you should mention that. The Route 66 Association of Missouri has our annual motor tour every September, and it is coming up. And it is sold out, but we always welcome people to tag along. I'm sure there's nothing stopping anyone from tagging along. And this year we're going to do something really interesting. We're going to start it in Litchfield, Illinois. It's the Missouri Motor Tour, but those of us from St. Louis, you know, Illinois is a part of our metropolitan area. And they have a really strong presence on Route 66. We'll be starting in Litchfield. We'll have a drive-in night the night before. And we'll be wrapping up in Cuba, where, of course, if you so desire, it's probably sold out. But, we'll be hanging out at the famous Wagon Wheel Motel that night. We're going to be staying in St. Louis at the Southwest Holiday Inn 66. We're going to take a riverboat cruise. We're going to see the Museum of Transportation, which I want to take a minute to tout. I mean, I'm sure we're going to talk about places in St. Louis that are kind of overlooked. But the National Museum of Transportation, I think, is one of our premier attractions for the family. And I think it's underrated. I don't think it gets nearly the mentions that it deserves, because who doesn't like to climb on trains? And I mean, at the Museum of Transportation, they have all this rolling stock and all these engines and all these fantastic trains that you can climb all over and go through. And I recommend, and even they have, of course, a little train you can ride on, but they have an actual trolley that runs, you know, through the park and everything. And I just don't think it gets the recognition it deserves. So even if you don't plan on joining us on the motor tour, if you're ever in St. Louis and you find yourself looking for an attraction, you know, we have so much for the family and so many of our attractions are free. This is another one that's very reasonable in cost, and you will get your money's worth. You will spend an entire day there. And let's face it, I say it's quote unquote for the kids, but sorry, but you'll see me climbing up there right with them.
Well, you know, back in the trolley, just a hair, speaking of trolleys, on the motor tour, you can find information about that on the Missouri Route 66 Association website.
Yep, 66.mo66.org.
Very good. Yeah, you know, I've had this conversation a lot lately with the folks out in L.A. And a couple other cities, that the Route 66 enthusiast misses a lot of the cities. And I've puzzled over this. You know, we blame it on traffic. We blame it on crime, perception of crime, real, otherwise. But I think it's more psychological. I think it's more, we've sold Route 66 as this quintessential American road trip. Americana, small town America, Pontiac, Atlanta. And as a result, people have a tendency not to associate the cities with Route 66.
That's a great point. I hadn't looked at it quite that way, that we had been selling it as a rural experience. But it's not. Purely, you know, Route 66 was about connecting all of these big cities. And I think the perception of crime, that's a tough one for me to address, because I want to explain St. Louis to you, okay? St. Louis has a reputation for crime that is not deserved. And it's because, a little history lesson for you, way back in 1876, St. Louis City and St. Louis County were permanently separated. You might as well have put a Berlin Wall between them. And the city limits were forever fixed at Grand Avenue. So as a result, like in a lot of cities, things moved to the suburbs. But unlike other cities, St. Louis was never able to expand past Grand Avenue. So the city of St. Louis is a very, very small section of the metropolitan area. There's 300,000 people that live in the city of St. Louis. Well, the metropolitan area is 2.5 million. And so taking crime statistics from the city of St. Louis is basically just like saying, okay, we're going to look at Chicago, but we're only going to take the crime statistics from the South Side or whatever. And if our city limits were the size of, say, Kansas City, you know, we'd be in the top 20 cities nationally. And our statistics, our crime statistics would be even right in the middle. I mean, if you look at it, if you look at the statistics for the St. Louis area, we would be right in the middle. And crime can happen to you anywhere. I've had the only time I ever had any trouble on Route 66, it was twice, once in a big city, but once in a very small town. And I think people, travel is to broaden your horizons, and fear narrows your horizons.
Ooh,
makes you afraid to try something or to do something, and you're not going to get very far enjoying life. The attractions are in the big city. St. Louis has so many free attractions for families. Our art museum is free. Our zoo, which is one of the finest in the country, is absolutely free. And Grant's Farm, which is the former Anheuser-Busch operated estate out in the suburbs where you see the, you know, all sorts of animals and things, is absolutely free. But what you see is you see these headlines, you know, and the media tends to focus on crime as a negative thing. And you tend to blow it out of proportion. I really think it is blown way out of proportion, especially in St. Louis. All big cities have problems.
Well, in small towns, Kingman, we have our problems. A lot of it's common sense.
Right.
You know, you don't drive through Watts or Compton wearing a pillowcase with eye holes. There's certain things you just don't do, and you have some common sense. And as far as the crime, you know, I personally have trouble in any place with more than 3 stoplights. I just feel claustrophobic. And you have helped me a lot with St. Louis get over things, going up around the Del Mar Loop, Forest Park, and Scott Piotrowski in L.A. When I was working on these book about crime and murder and mayhem on Route 66, there I stumbled into some stories that just made me laugh when we talk about crime today. Are you familiar with the taxi cab wars in St. Louis, mostly Chicago, New York, New Orleans?
But we had them, you know, in St. Louis, we had our 1920s gangs.
Yeah, the Egan's, you know, Rats.
And the green ones, and that was equal in violence to what they saw in Chicago, just not on such a large scale. But, you know, it does go back to that common sense thing. And as a traveler, if you leave valuables sitting in your front seat, your car is going to get broken into. I don't care if you're in, you know, the middle of, in Clinton, Oklahoma, Tucumcari, New Mexico, or St. Louis, Missouri. That's going to happen. It's just the way things are. And you have to have your wits about you. And if you come and you see these places, you have to lock your valuables inside the car. Don't skimp on parking. A big thing, I think, when people visit the cities that they do is they try to park cheap, okay? And that means a surface lot or perhaps something that's not as guarded as well or as secure. Spend the extra money to be in a secure parking garage.
I found some stories from the Chicago taxi was when Checker Cab and Yellow Cab were fighting. And I was reading some of these stories, and here one that particularly came to mind was, so when people talk about this crime in Chicago, they had an incident where a Checker Cab driver rammed a Yellow Cab, pushed it off the street, onto the sidewalk, into a building. And the driver got out and forcibly removed the passenger and put him in his car. So now we want to talk about crime.
Right.
And visiting cities. You know, St. Louis, like say, it does get short shift. That Museum of Transportation is, I had trouble with words. A lot of people don't realize that St. Louis had a thriving automobile industry. And
that's a good point. We were number two.
And the Museum of Transportation preserves a lot of that history.
Yeah, we were number two behind only Detroit in the as far as an auto manufacturing center. And it's like in much of your work focusing on the one-off brands or the brands that were very small. We had dozens and dozens and dozens. And there's a portion in St. Louis called the old what the old automobile row was, where the buildings that these early manufacturers put up, Doris and St. Louis, and I'm forgetting many of them, but they put up these elaborate buildings, and they're still there. And you can take a walking tour and see some of this remarkable architecture that's based on the automobile. And it was designed to get this city on wheels and to get people out on the road. And it's worth that you could spend a day doing that, just checking out the automobile buildings.
You and I are overdue. We have had some great adventures. That's one we have to do. I did that with Dave Clark up in Chicago. Did a little bit of that in L.A. And those old automobile places we are losing. And the architecture is very unique.
It was designed to evoke in speed, obviously, but I think in St. Louis's cases, a lot of it was designed to evoke elegance. You'll find Auburn and some of these Accord, some of those that come to mind had elaborate buildings because, well, let's face it, they were elaborate and expensive vehicles and they exuded class. And so so you can still see a lot of their buildings, but they still have the buildings. And some of the old factories are still there. The Doris factory has been converted into lofts. The old Ford Model T plant has been converted into lofts. And you can still see there's still all these remnants of this automobile culture.
You know, one of my favorite old car facilities is the one in Pasadena on Colorado Boulevard at the old Packard facility.
Yeah.
Gosh darn it. If that is not an absolute stunning piece of architecture. Joe, you know, you've written, I don't know how many books. I have a shelf full of them here, but have you got any new books in the works or coming out?
Yeah, this will be my 19th. we have redone about 20 years ago I did my first book on Route 66 through St. Louis, trying to straighten everything out. And in the intervening years, I've learned so much and collected so much, and it's particularly photos, thousands and thousands of photos, that I decided we're going to redo that book, and we're going to call it Route 66 St. Louis Style. And we're going to delve into, with St. Louis, as with any of the large cities, but particularly, I think, with St. Louis and Los Angeles, the alignments are super difficult to trace. When you're in St. Louis, sometimes it's easier to ask which road didn't carry Route 66 at one time or another. So we delve into that, but it's pictures of, all of the, as many of the mom and pop motels and as many of the mom and pop restaurants and things that I could possibly cram into a book. I still had to leave a lot of things out because there's just that much stuff here. And it's true of the cities. The cities are the rural areas. It's just things are more concentrated there. It's just your attractions are concentrated in a few miles. And there is more to see and do in a mile and a half and on, say, Central Avenue in Albuquerque or in Los Angeles or Colorado Boulevard than that is spread out over miles and miles. In the rural areas, that's all it is. It's just concentrated.
Yeah.
So that'll be out in September.
Well, I look forward to this very much. I need to add something else to the collection here. The other thing you have there in St. Louis, of course, is the bridges. The one that comes to mind is the Eads Bridge there. I don't think that gets enough attention.
You know, it doesn't. And it's actually one of the few bridges that never carried 66.
Yeah.
But it's so close to it. And, you know, the Eads Bridge is a marvel of engineering. And you hear that term gets overused. But the Eads Bridge truly is the first, what particular kind of steel bridge. I mean, and you know, that thing went in there in 1876, and it's still not only carrying traffic in our metro trains, but it's strong, and that thing will be standing, you know, thousands of years from now. And Eads was such a remarkable engineer and such a remarkable person. The bridge may be what he's most famous for, but he did many, many other things, and he was completely self-taught. You know, the story everybody likes to tell about the Eads Bridge is how they discovered the bends, the diseased bends, you know, and how they came up with the decompression chamber and everything there. And, you know, he went on to design a system of jetties that kept the mouth of the Mississippi free of silt. He built gunboats for the Union Army. Eads was an amazing figure, and when you delve into his story, and that's just one bridge. I mean, my favorite, and I'm sure of many of the people in the Route 66 community, is the Chain of Rocks Bridge, which is beloved for its bend in the middle, its 24-degree bend in the middle, which was put there to keep it from hindering navigation. And you will remember it from the John Carpenter movie Escape from New York, because that's the scene in that movie where Adrienne Barbeau breathed her bosom last on the bridge. And, you know, and that's our beloved 66 attraction. Best at the moment, it's undergoing a major restoration effort, or I should say renovation effort, on the Missouri side. They're building a welcome center and increasing security. There you go. And doing a bunch of things while they're building a new interstate bridge just to the north. So right now it's a great time to visit, because you can watch them building the new interstate bridge just to the north. So we love our Chain of Rocks, and that is one of the six bridges that carried Route 66, because they were always changing it, trying to get us there a little quicker. You know, it was always the good thing is, yeah, let's get it through there quicker. So they were always moving the route.
You know, the Route 66 Centennial is going to be interesting, to say the very least. I'm really impressed already with the media attention. I'm impressed with the communities that are getting on the ball. I'm disappointed, as usual, in the communities that still don't get it and see the opportunities, if nothing else, for just crass economic development. It's kind of frustrating. The birthplace of 66 Festival down at Springfield is next week. I have a feeling that's going to be one of the premier events in 26.
It's turned out, yeah. It has turned into one of the premier annual events. And it, St. Louis, yeah, I don't know if all big cities are like this, but I think St. Louis tends to overlook Route 66. I think we're busy with the Cardinals and the soccer team and with Forest Park and with Union Station and the aquarium and everything, that Route 66 is pretty far down our list of things to promote. And I think it's hard to find people in this area that are getting excited about it, but it's those mid-sized towns and small towns like Springfield that are realizing, like you said, the crass economic value of such a thing. You know, and in St. Louis, 66 is, I guess, I don't want to say small potatoes, but they consider it small potatoes, yeah, perhaps. And we've got to work on that. But Springfield has just grabbed the bull by the horns. I think that has turned into almost the premier annual event on 66.
I would agree. And I get a kick out of it. I use Pontiac as an example a lot, Pontiac, Illinois. Those folks have figured out how to sell everything on the hog, including the squeal. They're, you know, they're not just myopic in seeing Route 66, but they've got Society of Guilders and different things. Route 66 is the hinge pin. But you're right, the big cities, I've talked a lot with the California Historic Association and Scott Piotrowski and others, getting the L.A. metro area interested. It's just almost an impossibility. They don't get it. They don't even see it as a component. And in a big city, you have so many diverse attractions, but why ignore one that could, you know, if you attract an extra 2,000 people a year because of Route 66, well, that's a pretty sizable number.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, in a town like Springfield, you know, that makes a massive difference. And you're right, because it is important. It's important to speak out and to let them know, to let the officials in your town know that you're traveling Route 66. I think in speaking to the people who actually have the attractions on the road, they're certainly aware of the impact that it has. You know, the Museum of Transportation people are certainly aware of it. The fellow who runs the Holiday Inn Southwest Route 66 is certainly aware of what a big chunk of his business comes from Route 66. But as far as the entire metro area, well, that's a different beast. But you look at the towns of, say, Pacific, Cuba, they promote it as it's almost part of, it's part of their identity. You're driving to town, there's the big banners. Pacific's got their Red Cedar Museum about to open in a few weeks too. That was a famous, I don't know if roadhouse is the right term, but it's not the wrong one, restaurant in Pacific for many, many years. It closed. I didn't think that anything would ever come of it, but the city bought it, seeing the economic impact, and they're turning it into a tourism center and a museum. And it's just, and that's close enough to St. Louis. Now, Pacific is literally just outside of St. Louis County, just across the county line in Franklin County. And they're part of the big city. They see themselves as part of the St. Louis area, yet they get it. So it's just a question of having forward-looking civic leaders in these towns. The problem with St. Louis is we don't think regionally. We never have, because, like I mentioned, the separation of the city and county, the two are at odds, and they work against each other. They try to attract business from the city to the county and from the county to the city. And the, you know, Schenker Avenue is like the Berlin Wall. And I think that's got something to do with it. And the same thing with L.A. It's so balkanized.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's
part of it.
Excellent, you know, terminology.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of these towns and kingdoms this way, too, we get things done at the grassroots level, and then the city usually gets on board. But it's like pushing a wheelbarrow full of fat people up a hill with a flat tire. It's exhausting sometimes. I'll have to talk to you and share with you. We developed this walking tour, this narrated, self-guided walking tour here with Kingman Main Street. And I got to tell you, this sparked something. I'd like to see this as a template in communities large and small. But I was astounded here in Kingman how difficult it is to find accurate history about some of these buildings. And the history that I've been taught and told and that's been passed on, not even remotely close. And you expect to have vague history of buildings built in the teens or earlier, but stuff in the 50s, trying to pin down when it was built and opened. Strange, really strange.
It's particularly true of that era because it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah.
So I find when researching St. Louis buildings that your best source is simply the old newspaper files. People's memories are faulty.
Yeah.
You know, my grandfather said that he did this, or that this is this, or this was this. And inevitably that turns out to be tinted with nostalgia.
Yes.
For one, and two, just plain old inaccurate. The newspaper files are helpful.
One of the problems we got into in Kingman, you'll laugh about this, but Kingman was not incorporated as a community, a city, until 1952. So before that, it was all county. And when I was researching for this walking tour, I found articles in the paper that the city was citizens of Kingman were outraged because the county was going to be wasting money on putting up street signs because people already knew where everything was. We didn't need street signs. So when you get into the newspaper files, you'll find things like, Black and Tar's Chevy dealership, half a block from so-and-so's restaurant on South Front Street. Well, where was the restaurant? There's no addresses.
Right. Yeah. Everybody knew. And you're right. And that's funny that you should mention that there was that people didn't think it was necessary, because the same thing happens, I think, in every town. You know, I think if you research just about any town, you would find, you'll always find a contingent of people. And this goes back to the Centennial, who are always saying, well, why do we need to do this? You know, why do we need to? And those are the ones you really got to rein in, because that sort of thing just really spreads.
Joe, I hope to see you up. If everything goes planned, which would be very unique and different, I should be going back to the Miles of Possibility Conference in October. And I'd like to maybe see some of that automotive stuff there in St. Louis, because I have missed this. And, you know, just like I say, I have trouble with these, with traffic and all this stuff. I have trouble with traffic in Kingman. It's too big for me. So you can imagine how I do in St. Louis or L.A. But I've learned that, like in L.A., at certain times you can negotiate your way through things and survive. And sure. And it's worth it. There's so much to see if you'll just have a little patience, take your time, and just like eating an elephant, one bite at a time.
Weird. I don't think of traffic. If you live here, you think St. Louis traffic is nothing.
Yeah.
And I guess in L.A., you know, the odd thing about L.A. is public transit actually goes where people live, so that's helpful. We don't really have that here.
Yeah.
So everybody's wedded to their cars, but I'll drive, so you don't have to worry about it.
Well, you know, I don't worry about it because you just go. That's right. It. You just flat go and just you treat it like a high speed demolition derby or a parking lot, and you just accept.
Do you know what
that.
Though? One thing for me in LA, for me, that's part of the experience. I love driving in Los Angeles. I don't find it frustrating at all. I enjoy it, but I like to drive. There's nothing I like better than to get on the 110 and just fly down those curves and let people cut me off. I don't care. I love driving. I love a town where you can be stuck in traffic at 2 a.m. To me, that's a city. Okay, that's vibrant. That's alive. I've sat on a freeway in Los Angeles at 2 o'clock in the morning in just normal volume, and I turned to my wife and I said, "Man, this is neat." And they looked at me like I was out of my mind. But just turn the radio on and take it. It's part of the experience. Chicago's the same way. Except in Chicago, it's a dang toll road.
Yeah, and the Chicago's in. I'll share sometime my experience. I hadn't been to Chicago in many, many years. This is probably 20 some years ago, and I took the train from Kingman to Chicago.
Sure.
And I knew if I could get on the Dan Ryan, I could figure out where I was at and get out of there.
Right.
And
right.
Somehow I ended up in a section of Chicago. It looked like a movie set for the apocalypse. I don't mean to be crude or don't mean this to sound prejudicial, but we ended up in an area where we looked like a carload of Q-tips. And
I hear you.
It was not a pretty picture. I told my wife that it was a cultural experience for our son, but it was a little unnerving. But there again, you know, it's part of the adventure. It really is
part of the adventure, because a wrong turn in a rural area can put me. I get, this is going to sound bad, but, you know, since you're being candid, I'm going to be candid too. I get scared in certain small towns.
You should.
I do, because I stick out like a sore thumb with my, you know, I don't want to talk politics. Nobody wants to talk.
No, we've got enough of that crap.
There's some things that scare me in a small town. So you just got to say, boy, I'm here to see this place, damn it.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not going to let what if keep me from having an experience of enjoying this little diner or this little thing just because it looks a little ticky-tacky. You never know. And I have found that some of the places that look the worst turn out to be the best.
Amen. Yeah, Joe, you're exactly right. Yeah.
I mean, I don't be afraid. I bypassed, I'm not going to mention it, the place, but there was a place in Oklahoma that I must have bypassed 50 or 60 times with never stopping because I thought it just didn't look clean. It just didn't look... you know, fancy or nice. And boy, that when I finally did stop just on this last trip a few months ago, they were the nicest people, and the food was freaking amazing. So I don't let that, we all have our fears, and you can't let that keep you from experiencing life, because it is damn short.
Yeah. You got to, you know, you're exactly right on this, and you got to have, of course, common sense, but there again,
right.
But you know, I've gotten into some, it's the people. If you sit down and listen to people and you start talking to people and being respectful, it's amazing the play, which you'll discover and where you'll end up. I have had that. I was in Winslow, oh gosh, more years ago than I probably should count, back when I was still running trucks. And ended up down at a place called White's Cafe. They had always told me to avoid White's Cafe. It's a dive bar cafe, nothing but the hardcore drunk Indians, you know, all that stuff. And I happened to be down there. Short story, I ended up talking to this fella and asking a couple questions. We sat down and had a plate of tacos together. He was a Navajo code talker.
No kidding.
During the war, you gotta talk to people. You gotta experience things.
They're the same, basically, no matter where you are, whether you're in East St. Louis or you're in Winslow, Arizona. People are just trying to get by.
Yeah.
They're just trying, most of them. I mean, you know.
If you surround yourself with only people who see the world as you do, right. You only eat at generic places when you travel, I only eat at Cracker Barrel, and you do right. these things, you find yourself so narrow-minded you can look down a beer bottle with both eyes.
Part of the problem we're running into with this country right now is nobody talks to each other anymore. Yeah. We're too busy sitting in front of the computer typing in all caps because we didn't vote for the same crooked son of a bitch that the other guy did.
Well, this is the essence of Route 66, I think, the magic of it. What makes this thing infectious? We have 500 friends on Facebook that we never met, and when we do meet them, we don't even like to have coffee with them. We don't take time to sit down, but it's all generic. It's impersonal. It's cold. Route 66 is alive. It's vibrant. It's got an infectious enthusiasm that transcends barriers of language and culture. And it
does.
Yeah.
There are people I am friends with because of Route 66 that had I just met them and knew a little bit about them, I might never speak to or hang out with in real life.
Yeah.
And think how much richer we all are for it. And I think it's coming back.
Yes.
I think we're starting to recover from COVID.
I do too.
I think we're coming back.
Joe, I want to thank you for taking time on your Sunday morning to do this. And I hope we've inspired a road trip, shared a bit of America's story. And I hope we've encouraged people to do a bit of exploring in St. Louis. And if nothing else, you can spend a day exploring St. Louis. And when you start to feel that paranoia and claustrophobia closing in, you can run out to Cuba and stay at the Wagon Wheel Motel with Connie.
Right.
Hey, one thing, is the drive-in theater still closed there in Cuba?
You know, the Highway 19 drive-in theater? I don't know. I believe so, but I don't know. I'm sure it's easy enough to find. I know that we still have one in Litchfield, Illinois, that's still active. And then, of course, obviously, the one in Carthage is still active. But I don't know about the Highway 19. That is the tiniest little drive-in theater. Now you've piqued my curiosity, so I'll do what I would encourage everyone else to do, and that's get on the internet and find out as soon as you can.
Miss Maggie May from East Lansing said that she said, "Joe, we've really enjoyed your talk with Jim." Nolan says the drive-in theater is still closed.
Ah, darn it! I was afraid of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just curious too about the drive-in theater. Joe, I have enjoyed this immensely, and we should do this more often. And
I'll work on learning modern technology.
Well, I joke about being Amish, but not by much. I tell you, I bluff my way through everything I do. I'm most comfortable with like something like a 51 Chevy or a Model A Ford. That's about the extent of my technology, but
you know what's funny though is my job is so high tech it's not even funny. But sometimes I have trouble with a cell phone.
Yeah,
it just goes to show you.
Do you have any?
I'm as high tech as all get out.
I know. I'll let you run, but any trips planned for out west in the near future?
I hope so. I've got some issues I have to deal with, you know, personal things.
Yeah.
Once I get those out of the way, I really have to get out west, because I seldom manage to get west of Amarillo, and Route 66 in a lot of respects really starts west of there for me. And so, yeah, I plan on getting out west. Hopefully we'll get to Kingman here before long, because from there it's just a hop, skip, and a jump to Vegas, baby.
Well, I'll tell you, Tucumcari is one I'm impressed. I know they had a big setback with a storm this year, but Tucumcari is really starting to do things.
They need to.
Yeah.
They have to.
The Princess Theater. We've got the Odin Theater downtown. But there's the Princess Theater, which dates back to about 1916, and it was remodeled sometime around 30, and it's all beautifully intact. And now they've got a Grassroots that's been down there. They've been cleaning it up. They cleaned up the ticket booth. They're cleaning up the facade. The Railroad Depot, they're holding events downtown all the time down in the little plaza. Mesalands Community College, they have the first-rate dinosaur museum there.
Really?
Yeah, they've got this is something in Mesalands Community College. They have, I am not exaggerating, it is a Smithsonian quality paleontology museum. It's small, but it is first class. And speaking of family things to do on Route 66 during the summer, it's not free, but it's not overly expensive. They offer individual and family packages where they'll take you out for 2 or 3 days in the desert near Tucumcari for fossil digs.
See, that's cool. Then all you needed is somebody to tell you about it.
Yeah.
To tell you that exists. Because everybody, when you think of Tucumcari, you think of one thing.
Yep.
You know, you think of the Blue Swallow, and you think of the safari, you think of the motels. And there's so much to do. And that's just one town. And if somebody from that town gets on the horn somewhere and tells the whole world about it, that's where your interest is going to come from. And that's what I try to do for my little corner of the woods.
I tease Scott Piotrowski about this because he's totally anal with the LA area. Roots, the world ends, you fall off the edge of the earth if you go beyond San Bernardino. And, you know, I think we need somebody such as yourself in St. Louis, Scott in LA. We need somebody that's absolutely anal in every single community. And
what it takes.
Yeah. Joe, thank you so very much for doing this. And
no, it's an honor. It's my privilege. I mean, Jim, we go so far back, and you've taught me a whole lot about life and a whole lot about people. And I can only hope, you know, to someday have your experience and your wisdom.
You do, Joe.
You're one of a kind. That's not sucking up. That's not.
Well, now I got to have a bigger hat.
Yeah, well, that's the gospel truth.
And, you know, Joe, you've helped.
Anytime you need something, you just let me know.
You've always been there, and Joe, you've helped me more than you know. And I know we ran a little bit later today. That's one of the advantages of having my own thing. I can do my own thing here. But one of my great memories with you, aside from exploration in Tucumcari, was that Beacon Hill Motel experience. We went up there with Roman Rich. We were almost late for our book signing, and it looked like when we got there, it looked like people had beat us with sticks and drug us through down the road behind the truck. But damn, we had fun.
And we were out poking around in the ruins of an old motel, which was one of my favorite things to do, and those opportunities are getting fewer and fewer. And I'll treasure that. I'll treasure that. It's so funny you brought that up. And now it's gone.
Yeah.
So there's another good example. Thankfully, we took the time to do that while it was still there, because a few months later, it burned down. And that's why don't wait. Don't hesitate. Don't say, well, maybe someday I'll do this. Or well, I'm afraid. No, do it. Because someday that thing might not be there. Or you might find yourself where your days are getting numbered, and you may look back and regret not having that experience.
Joe, thank you.
Well, hey, thank you.
My friends, we will do this again next week. You're going to like what we got next week. I have two fellows next week, Kent Bakke and Roderick Wild. And Joe, we're going to have something really diverse next week. These two gentlemen, their interest intersect with electric vehicles. They are creators of the Historic Electric Vehicle Foundation, starting a museum and an electric vehicle experience here in Kingman. But they all that's from there they diverge. Kent Bakke is obsessed with the coffee and the history of coffee machines, espresso machines. He imports espresso machines from Italy. And Roderick has a vintage golf cart business and collects and restores 19th century bicycles. So that should be entertaining. Hey, my friends, we will do this again next week, same time. We ran a little bit late today. I sure hope you don't mind. Until we meet again, my friends, you take care. And if you find yourself on the road and you find yourself in Tucumcari, say hello to David Brenner at the Roadrunner Walk. Take good care of you.
Gary. Say hello to a new friend.
Take care, my friends.
Take a two-lane trip of memories into mysteries unknown. Come along for the ride. Jim Hinckley's America. Jim Hinckley's America.
We've got next week, like I say, Kent Bakke, Roderick Wild. The week after that, we're going to be talking with Steve Roth from Quattro Publishing. We're going to be talking about the changing face of the publishing industry, the changing face of writing, publishing, books, what books are popular, the Route 66 Centennial. And I'm talking with some folks in Needles, California, to have them on the show here pretty quick. A lot of neat things happening in Needles. Dora Maroney from the Texas Route 66 Association. She'll be joining us shortly, a few weeks. You can find information about all the programs coming up on our website, jimhinckleysamerica.com. And these programs, if you want to share them or re-listen to them, they're archived on our website, and they're also archived on Spotify and other platforms. My friends, thank you. I hope you don't mind we ran a little bit late today, but, well, we were having some fun. My friends, vaya con Dios and adios amigos.